Hi everyone, and thank you for listening to Lit Radio podcast. I'm your host, Teja, and today I'm joined by Sangeeta Waldron. We will talk about her latest book, What Will Your Legacy Be? Conversations with Global Game Changers about the Climate Crisis. Sangeeta is a multi-award-winning communications professional and a published author specializing in climate change, sustainability, and corporate social responsibility. Her previous book, Corporate Social Responsibility is Not Public Relations, was shortlisted for the UK Business Book Awards in 2022. What Will Your Legacy Be? Will help readers understand some of our biggest environmental challenges and how individuals, communities, organizations, and nations are restoring our planet. Hi, Sangeeta. It's a great pleasure to have you with us on the Lit Radio podcast. I'm very excited to talk with you about your new book, What Will Your Legacy Be? But before we do that, could you share with us when you became so passionate about the topic of climate change?
Yeah, thanks, Teja, for having me. I'm really excited to be speaking about this third book. And I was thinking about this question of when did I first become interested? And, you know, I can trace it back to when I was age 10. And at that time, I joined Greenpeace. Greenpeace was looking for young reporters. And I joined to become a young reporter reporting about, I don't know what it was, but I guess nature at that time where I was living. So that was my first sort of step. And I think nature's always been part of my life. I've been very lucky to live growing up in my teens in the lower ranges of the Himalayas. I've lived in desert areas. Nature's always been part of my life. And when I came back to London in my 20s, I managed to buy, well, after some time, I managed to buy my first flat living on a river. So nature's always been part of my life and something I've always felt is important to us, whether we're in business or whether we're living in communities, nature plays a big role.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Nature is indeed very important to all of us. And then when did you decide to write the book?
Well, the book has taken over a year and a half to write. And it was, I think, you know, since the pandemic, I'm no longer good with years. But I think in 2023, Martin, who is the, as we know, is the MD at LID, said to me in January at that time, Sangeeta, I think you're ready for your next book. And at that time, I was also thinking of ideas. I felt something within me sort of percolating. And I thought, yeah, I said, Martin, you're right. But I wanted to, and then I was looking at the news, and we live in an age of misinformation, what we now call the era of fake news, and also information overload. And every day we're seeing headlines about climate change, which is great, but I don't think a lot of us still understand what the issues are and how everything is connected, how business is connected to the climate crisis, how food is connected to the climate crisis, how does science fit in, how does art and music, all these different aspects. And so I wanted to write a book that people felt they were informed. They felt they had the facts to make their own informed decisions. And one of the other things in that I wanted to do with the book was have different themes, but also have different voices representing the different themes within the book. So it really was, and I wanted to also write a book for everyone, not just business. Business plays a very important role, but also us as individuals, as business leaders, as people within communities, as young people as well.
Absolutely, and I think that's a very important mission. But before we talk more about the content of the book, and because this is a book podcast, could you share what was the writing process for you? How did you write this book?
So it took me a year and a half to write, and it was a for me it was a long process. My last two books were done very quickly, and this book I was writing in every spare moment that I had. So I was still working, still doing all the mum stuff, you know, and also just everyday living. So it was finding moments to write. And then also a lot of research went into the book. And as I was writing, new data and new research was coming through. So I wanted the book to be as reflective as possible about what was happening in the news with the climate crisis. And also researching the different people I wanted in the book. And sometimes, and I think when anyone is writing, you know, you can sometimes have writer's block. You don't know how to write, or you keep rewriting that page until you feel it feels right for you. So there'll be times when I was on a roll, you know, I would start writing maybe at 5 and still writing, and it was 6:30. And my son would say, "Mum, what about dinner?" And I'd be like, "Rory, I'm on a roll. You'll have to just figure it out yourself. You know, let me just, I have to get on and do this." So I think it, you know, I didn't have the luxury of just going to a retreat or doing this somewhere. It was writing the book amongst other things. So that wasn't that easy, because also it's finding that time. There's always something else to be doing.
Absolutely, and I think that's the case with many business authors, because they're all busy people, so it's sometimes very tricky to find time to write, and then it might be very tiring at times. But for your book, part of the process also included interviewing 36 global change makers. So could you share with us what was most important for you when you were choosing those individuals, people that you wanted to interview for the book?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I mean, I did a lot of research, so I have different themes in the book. So it was finding the right voices. So people who were, I think, first of all, were authentic with their work was very important to me. But also people who were doing, you know, I was thinking as a reader, who would I like to read about? Who would I like to know about? So that was my criteria. So I tried to put myself in the reader's shoes. And I also wanted to give a very global perspective in the book and find voices from around the world, because I think we learn from others. And if there's one thing the global pandemic showed us, it was how connected we all are. So I wanted to show, represent rather, diversity of voice and be as inclusive as possible. One of the things I've noticed in the climate conversation is that we don't have enough representation in this conversation. We don't have enough women speaking about the climate crisis. And women are, in the developing world, the first community to be hit by any climate disaster. And so that was important. I also wanted to find, you know, some of the real heroes that are doing amazing work, and who will give us hope, because this is also a book of hope. And I was speaking, as I mentioned, I'm speaking to different audiences. I also wanted credible business people within the book. So I had different criterias, and I would make my list of people to approach for the different chapters.
Amazing. And I know the next question might be quite tricky to answer, but could you choose one of your favorite interviews from the book, and also tell us why it made such an impact on you?
Teo, you're asking me a very difficult question. It's like asking me to choose my favorite child.
You know, it's a difficult one.
Yeah, I mean, all the stories, all the conversations are so inspiring and they inspired me. But if I had to choose one, I think it was what I learnt about the humpback whales, the magic of these creatures, and what they do for the planet. I had no idea. I spoke to a researcher who has dedicated her life to humpback whales. And that story also made me realize that nature has thought of everything. You know, everything about this ecosystem that we live in has a purpose. Every species has a purpose. And they all know how they fit, and they all know what their job is. Sadly, it's us as humans that have gone in and disrupted the ecosystem. And really now it's up to us to find out how we fit into the system to make a real difference instead of devastation. You know, I think it's our responsibility now to play a better role with nature. We've been working against a lot of what nature has provided, and humpback whales are one of those species that plays a very important role. And I don't want to say what that is. I want people to go away to buy the book to discover the magic of these creatures, but they do a really important role. And sadly, because of overfishing, because of what's happening within the ocean, plastic pollution, fishermen's nets, plastics nets being left in the ocean, these species are declining, and therefore we're out of sync within the ocean.
Well, that's very sad to hear, but I think you made a very interesting point that we need to find out how we fit into the ecosystem. So, Sangeeta, do you know how we actually fit into the ecosystem, or do we need to find out the answer to that question yet?
Oh, that's a really big question. How do we all fit? I mean, I don't have all the answers, and neither is this book telling people what to do. But I think a lot of people always ask me, what can I do? What can one person do? And my answer is, one person can do so much. And well, if one person just makes a start, it's like a ripple effect, and all these ripple effects can come together to create what I call a positive tsunami of change. And I think how we all fit is to be informed. We need to be informed about the choices we're making. We need to be informed about what's happening in the world. And we need to be informed by trusted sources. And I think that if that's our place right now, it's to do that one thing. To really know what we're reading and what we're reading is true.
Yeah, I think that's very powerful. And earlier you mentioned that in the book you cover different themes, so you've got in total 9 of them. So that ranges from science through food to business and leadership. So now, Sangeeta, I would like to discuss just a few of them with you, starting with media. So you just mentioned that we need to read from credible sources when it comes to the climate change and the environment. So what role does the media play in the whole climate crisis?
Wow, I mean, these days in 2025, it plays an enormous role. You know, I mean, if we go back to the 1990s, climate change wasn't really covered here in the West. It was a very small story that may be found within the paper. Now we see a lot of the papers and on our TVs, it's headline news. So the media plays a very important role because we're also living in that age of fact and fiction. And we've also seen very recently, as we've just started this year, that social media platforms play a very important role. And we see a lot of climate deniers, Actually challenging the truth and actually challenging the science. I mean, we don't argue about gravity. We all believe gravity exists, and that's been proven by science. So why do we challenge the science of climate? And we can see that man-made actions create changes within our weather patterns, within our climate. So these are real events that are happening. They're not made up, they're not conspiracy theories, and the media plays a role within that because it informs us. It's our role to make an informed and conscious choice of where we're getting that information from, whether we're going to go to trusted sources or whether we're just going to get our news from social media, in which case that's very dangerous. So that the media plays an enormous role. It shapes our thinking. It informs us. It creates who we are. And I think as we see this year, we're seeing social media platforms gaining more authority. They're being allowed to downgrade their fact-checking algorithms. I think that's going to make it harder for a lot of people to know what is truth and what is not truth. And not just in climate change, but in everything from politics to celebrity stories to everything. So I think we need to really look at the media, which media we are reading.
Absolutely. And you made an interesting point about there being a lot of climate deniers. And well, we can tell our listeners that in November last year, we were presenting your book in the London Business Show, and we ourselves talked with a lot of climate deniers there. So, Sangeeta, how can we deal with those people who don't believe the science and what's happening, even though we can see it in the media?
That's another really good question, Taya. I mean, yes, you and I experienced the climate deniers. They actually came to find us, which I think is also very interesting, to tell us what they believe is true. And they don't want to talk with you, they want to talk at you. And I think the only way, I mean, I remember at the business show, three young boys came up. They must have been about 17, 18. And they were three different characters. One believed in climate change, one did not believe, and one couldn't care less. But I spent time talking to them, and because I thought it was important. And at the end of it, they said to me, "Thank you for spending time chatting with us. We will now reconsider our thinking." The climate denier said, I still don't believe in it, but you've given me something to think about." And he might go away and reflect, or he could have just been saying that to me in that time. But I think the only way we can counteract disinformation and these kind of conversations is to keep talking about it, which is why podcasts like this are really important. The more we talk about it, the more that subject is kept on the news agenda. And the more we invest in truth, I think, you're upholding truth. So therefore, those conversations again are part of social discourse. I was also thinking, this morning before we got onto this podcast, I was just thinking, I saw something and I was thinking maybe the climate movement has to be now far more strategic than it has been. And while we have seen, we know that there are these bots and the climate deniers use bots, they use AI to on social media to counteract the truth. Well, maybe the climate movement should have something similar. So we have climate crisis bots. So every time it sees a climate denier spreading some disinformation, that bot goes in to counteract that. I think that the movement has to become far more strategic and sophisticated, and step up its game, because that's what the climate deniers are doing. We have to, I mean, the only phrase I can use right now, and it's probably not the right phrase to use, but is just to play f fire with fire.
I couldn't agree more with that. I mean, it's very difficult to deal with climate denial sometimes. But one of the other themes that you have in the book is business. And we know that companies and businesses can be huge generators of carbon emissions, which are contributing to the climate change. So, have you got any tips for leaders who might be listening to us today? What can they do to ensure their companies are operating in the most sustainable way possible?
Yeah, I mean, I want to first start by saying that I know it can be very overwhelming for businesses and business leaders to know where to start, how to start, and do it right. Because you, again, we're living in this kind of age where we seem to shoot down people who are trying to do the right thing. So my advice would be to any business who is starting out on this journey, or who is already, on this journey of being sustainable, is to always do an inventory. Always look inwards, first of all. What are you doing as a business? What are your sustainable practices? Is everyone in your organization joined up? Have you shared all your corporate social responsibility values with your team? Is it top down, bottom up, top down? Is it shared sideways? So it has to be, everyone in the organization needs to know what your sustainability initiatives are, first of all. Second, what are you doing that can be improved upon? So are your suppliers authentic? Do they have the same values as you? How are you dealing with your waste? Is your energy, can you switch energy providers to become more renewable energy efficient? So there are different things you can do. But I think the first thing is to do an inventory of your practices. And then once you know what those are, you can start to reduce your carbon footprint.
Yeah, I think those are some great tips. And of course, any leaders listening to us today, they can grab a copy of the book and read more because you've got some more fascinating insights inside the book.
I love that plug.
But interestingly, Sangeeta, one of the other topics that you cover in the book is art and music. So what does this have to do with the climate crisis?
That's another good question. Well, if you read the book, you read that chapter, music and art has always played a very important role for us as communities. It connects us to nature. And lots of music, and in fact, I've got a list there of certain sort of popular music that's been influenced by nature. And it's actually got very pro climate messages in the lyrics. Music that you probably have heard a thousand times and never really thought about being climate. About the climate crisis or about the planet. So, music and art connects us to nature. It connects us to our sense of being. Even the sounds of nature, when we're in nature, when we're at the sea, all those nature sounds connect us and we feel part of something. We feel part of our ecosystem. And it's been proven that just by spending a little time, whether it's walking or just being in nature and listening to the sounds, it connects us to nature itself and where we feel more conscious of doing the right thing. So we might become more conscious of not dropping our litter. We become more conscious of not wasting water. We just become more conscious. And there is proven research to show that music and art helps in creating that awareness.
That's very interesting indeed. But the aim of the book is to encourage anyone to do their bits and implement some small changes that would help. So could you share two or three small tips or changes or habits that our listeners can implement in their life today? Changes that would make a positive impact on the environment?
Yeah, so there's very small changes we can do, but it's about creating more of a mindset to do it and to be conscious to do it so we don't forget about doing them. So it's no point doing it one day and then forgetting for the rest of the week. So the simple things are when you're brushing your teeth, don't let the tap run, switch the tap off. Water now is a very, it's like gold. You know, water is on the decline. So care about your water. So switch the tap off when you're brushing your teeth. If you have a garden, try and collect the water in containers to water your garden throughout the year. That makes a difference. If you are in an office and you have meetings, don't have bottled water. Have water served in jugs. It's far more sustainable. Take your bottle, you know, your bottle water to work and refill it. Don't buy bottled water. Other things we can do, and this is, you know, this is just a suggestion, but it has been shown that by just keeping one day a week meat free makes a big difference to the planet. And that can sound very controversial to some people. But just being meat free reduce does it has reduces your own carbon footprint, first of all. And it's just better for you. It's a and it also just puts you more into that mindset of being conscious of what you're doing, what you're eating, what you're choosing. The other thing is when you're going shopping, look at what you're buying. Look at the, I mean, I'm sadly, when we're looking at vegetables, we don't know what their carbon footprint is. But try to be as conscious as you can when you're buying. So don't buy things wrapped in plastic. Try and also find out what vegetables are in season. Because we've forgotten that. We think strawberries are throughout the year. People don't even understand what seasonal fruit and veg are anymore. So we need to make that our job to find out what's in season. And if you can, eat just one vegetable a week that's in season. Just do that once a week, and that will make a difference. Not just to the planet, but it'll make a difference to you.
It's very simple, isn't it? We just need more people to do it.
Yeah, and people can. You know, these are not life-changing things to do. You know, no one is saying, you know, walk around with a piece of thread around, you know, and just walk barefoot and live a life of a, I don't know, of a recluse. No, we still have to lead our lives. We still have to do business. We still have to work. We still have to travel. We still have to do international travel. But it's just where can we do the little things? Because the little things do add up. And I guess the most important thing, Taya, is be informed. That's probably the biggest and most simplest thing anyone can do is just to be informed.
I really like that message. And Sangeeta, I've got just one final question to end this really fascinating conversation. So early on, you said something very interesting that what will your legacy be is a book of hope. But do you think there is still hope for the planet and the environment?
100, I'm going to say change that, 500%, yes. One, yes, for sure. And I know that because interviewing 36 people from around the world, including scientists, every single one of them have belief and hope. They know that their work is making an impact. And while we can't go back and change things, we can certainly find the solutions to deal with the challenges that we have now. So, yes, this book will inspire people because at the end of every conversation, I felt so inspired. Genuinely, I felt inspired. And in some moments, I felt very moved that humanity is, there are parts, groups of humanity working together to make change.
Well, I think that's a very positive note to end the podcast on. So thank you very much, Sangeeta, for coming on the podcast today and for sharing bits about your new book. Of course, we would encourage our listeners to grab a copy and read more about all of the nine themes that you cover. But it was a really fascinating conversation for me. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Taya, for having me. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.